All right. We're incredibly privileged to have as our guest today Sharon Jennings. So Sharon works, she's got an incredible history as a passionate advocate for sex worker rights and is currently the manager of the Sex Industry Network. The Sex Industry Network is a peer-based not-for-profit organisation, and I will let Sharon talk to us a little bit more about what SIN do and the structure of the organisation. But welcome aboard, Sharon. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me, Zariba.
So could you tell us a little bit about the work that SIN do, how they're organised, a bit about the organisational structure?
Sure. Well, SIN have been going for 30 years now in various different capacities. We started as a small group of sex workers that were getting together to discuss how we would navigate the harassment and discrimination that we were facing from the police. And we called ourselves the Prostitution Association of South Australia, or PASA, back then. But of course, prostitute isn't really a socially acceptable word now. We've gone through different structures. We've been funded by the AIDS Council, and we're now in the process of becoming incorporated. We're auspiced at the moment by Scarlet Alliance, which is the national sex worker organisation. They're holding our hand until the end of next year, and then, all being well, we'll be flying solo from there, which is quite exciting. There's 9 paid members of staff at SIN, all part-time, and we usually have anything between 2 and 6 volunteers as well. So there's a lot of passionate sex workers there. And yes, everybody that works or volunteers there has to have some sort of history as a sex worker and be out about that and upfront, because of course we can't do advocacy without that. So that's a huge ask for the people that do volunteer their time or work there, because we're outing ourselves to society by doing that as well. And the work that we do... We do a lot of advocacy, as I said. We also have a shop that sells safer sex products to sex workers and the broader community. We go out and we do training and education with sex workers, and also anybody that would work or come into contact with sex workers about inclusive practices and the issues that sex workers face. We do a lot of lobbying with Parliament, of course, and parliamentarians about sex worker rights and why we need decriminalisation of our industry to keep us safe.
Absolutely. It's incredible work, as we said, but one of the things that's going on at the moment is, of course, a bill that's passing through Parliament. We'll hopefully get through this time to decriminalise sex work, because I don't know if everyone's aware, but South Australia is currently the only state in Australia where sex work is still criminalised. So do you mind talking to us a little bit, Sharon, about the decriminalisation bill and where that's up to?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's important, first of all, to explain the difference between decriminalisation and legalisation. Yes. Because you hear a lot of allies saying, we really believe that sex work should be legalised, and we actually don't. There's a big difference between legalisation and decriminalisation. Legalisation means there would still be caveats placed around how we work and what we do, and those caveats can be anything. You know, in different states, there are different things, such as having to register yourself as a sex worker, and that's in your legal name, and that register exists for the rest of your life. So if you want to move out of the industry and pursue different careers, that's a real barrier. And also paying for licences, etc. And there's very low adherence rates in states where legislative models are in place. Decriminalisation means that we would be recognised as an industry like any other industry, and we would come under the same regulations as any other occupation. So there would still be laws in place for anything that was outside the law, but we would just be recognised as being, you know, upstanding members of community, just doing a job like everybody else. So that's what we're after. Now the bill, in many different forms, has been presented at least 7 times, to my knowledge. But this latest bill was presented by Michelle Lensing in 2015, and it was presented in the House of Assemblies. And it has to be voted on three times as a yes, and then it will be passed into the lower house, and the same thing occurs. And of course, each time it's presented and voted on, there's discussions around, well, what about this, what about that? There's obviously politicians that are for and against that are arguing and debating the case. So we've had two yes votes so far in the upper house, but the second one was... under the understanding that it went to a select committee, so a group of politicians that sit together and they have people with knowledge about sex work coming in and educating them about it and whether they think that this is the right model to move forward. And to cut a long story short, they've written a report, and the majority of the select committee have said, absolutely, we need full decriminalisation. This is the bill that should go forward. So yes, I think it's the 5th of July is the third... Yeah, the third vote. So everything crossed. I love your optimism, how you said, you know, we're talking about the bill that's passing through Parliament. I really hope we are.
Jumping the gun a bit, but I really hope so. It's been a long time.
In terms of majority, there's majorities and majorities. Where is it at in terms of this up house majority? Do they publish the numbers of, say, you
it's
know,
slim.
We're currently? It's slim.
It's very slim. And it always has been. We've always missed out by very slim margins as well. But this time it looks like we might actually get it through by very slim margins. And we're really heartened by the fact that there were some politicians that were dead set against it until this select committee. And they have been educated around it and gone, you know what? What I thought was the right way to go actually isn't. And this makes sense. So they're voting with us now.
So some real input in terms of education.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I was a little bit involved with some of the work that was going on, but would it be fair to say that there has been, you know, it's been really driven by the sex work industry and sex workers themselves in terms of coming up with a bill? It's, you know, it hasn't been...
Yeah, absolutely. Look, this the amendment bill that's been presented at the moment was first drafted by Steph Key. And Steph's always been a very staunch advocate of sex workers and the decriminalisation of our industry. And this bill was drafted in full consultation with sex workers. It was a very long and very in-depth consultative process that we were very pleased with. And the bill is exactly what sex workers need. So yeah, it's been done very collaboratively, and we're very pleased with it.
It's incredible to hear. And one of the things that kind of plagues, from what I've noticed throughout the years, plagues the national conversation and the international conversation around sex work and decriminalising sex work is a whole host of misconceptions. And I think you'd know all about those. But one of those being, you know, I think there's a populist movement around the Nordic model being a preferred model. Can you explain to us? Because I think there is still a huge perception out there, a very wrong perception, but a huge perception out there that the Nordic model works and that it protects sex workers, but still lets us get away with our, you know, moral issues with, you know, the industry. But can you explain a little bit about the Nordic model and why it's not actually a good model?
Sure. Look, first of all, I'd like to say that anybody that supports the Swedish model often comes from a good place. You know, they see that the way we're working at the moment is not working, and that something needs to be done. And on paper, this looks like it would be quite a good way forward. But in reality, it's really, really harmful. So the Nordic model or Swedish model criminalises anybody that benefits from somebody who's doing sex work, which of course includes clients, which takes away our autonomy in choosing our own business, because you're actually taking away our clients. It's like somebody, it's like vegans rallying outside of butchers, you know. And in Sweden, they actually have task forces that sit outside sex worker establishments and arrest clients as they come out. So quite obviously, sex workers cannot work from the same premises repetitively, because the police find out where they are, they stake it out, and clients just stop coming. So this doesn't protect the sex worker. What it actually does is remove her method of income.
Yeah. Why do people think that the Swedish model is a good one?
You tell me.
there's huge concerted efforts and hugely well-funded organisations that put out a lot of propaganda, and they're very well organised. Is that fair to say?
I would say that's absolutely fair to say. Yeah, a lot of religious organisations with large money backing them as well. So sex workers obviously are working in very clandestine ways in Sweden and other countries where this has been brought in. Negotiation about safer sex and how a booking is going to be and what's going to happen in that booking can't occur over the phone because clients are too terrified to speak over the phone in case the person they're speaking to is not actually a sex worker, but it's some sort of entrapment. So the sex workers are meeting clients in various locations, sometimes their homes, sometimes, you know, but wherever, it's not their safe space. And so they're out of their comfort zone straight away. It's brought the statistics for sex work down dramatically because it's pushed sex work really underground. And of course, that's skewing the figures, and people are saying it's successful. Well, it's not successful in protecting sex workers. What it's actually doing is it's successful in reducing the numbers on paper. But those sex workers haven't gone away. They're just working in different ways.
And the statistics don't reflect the reality because otherwise they'd be nailed for it.
Absolutely. And of course, then, you know, they're caught in a situation like we are here where they can't report any crimes that are committed against them because, you know, they're going to be outed as a sex worker by doing that, and then they're going to come under police scrutiny, and it's a mess. There are landlords that have sex workers living in their premises are also prosecuted and treated quite harshly under these laws. They get 2 weeks to evict the sex worker once they've been informed, you know, your tenant is a sex worker, and if they don't, they are prosecuted. And even
is this whether or not they're actually conducting their business there?
Yes. Because they're profiteering from a sex worker, even if they're not conducting their business there.
It's atrocious, isn't it? Yeah. Really, I mean, it's a human being that deserves a roof over their head.
Yeah, and adult children, such as, you know, students that might be living at home and their mother supporting them through their studies. It's also been known that they've been prosecuted under these laws too.
So misconception, I think, plays probably a very large role in the conversations that we've been having internationally, and I think they would be fair to say that they contribute quite a bit to the stigma that we still have that surrounds sex work, which is kind of a cyclical thing. Are there any other common, and I know that there are a lot of them, but common misconceptions and myths around sex work and sex workers that are damaging, and what are the most common misconceptions, do you think, and misrepresentations, and how do they affect the industry? Sorry, that's a very, very big question, but in particular, I wanted to get your thoughts, for instance, on there's a massive misconception, I think, around things like the conflation of sex work with sex trafficking, and I think that's definitely something that's exploited by the Christian lobby, for example, in terms of, you know, we're doing this to protect women, to protect people because there's these issues out there, but they're obviously conflating, you know, consensual work with something that's totally different. Is there any other, do you think, common misrepresentation that you would like to?
Yeah, well, in regards to the trafficking, you've just summed it up. You know, it's often the religious lobbying groups and also media that jump on this whole sex trafficking thing because it creates human interest, you know, and as soon as the word trafficking is mentioned, people think about sex trafficking, and you know, it's minute and non-existent. It's mostly labour trafficking, but that's the way it's presented because, you know, it's titillating, and it gets the results that they want. The other, there are quite a few major myths and misconceptions, but of course the one that we're vectors of disease. You know, sex workers are riddled with STIs, and we're spreading these STIs left, right and centre, which is the biggest load of rubbish ever. And if you want to have safe sex, the safest sex you can possibly have is with a sex worker.
Absolutely.
We have the highest rates of condom adherence and the lowest rates of STIs, much, much lower than the general public, because our bodies are our business. If our bodies are diseased, we can't work, we can't earn, and so, yeah, it would become a repetitive cycle. And so it makes absolute sense that, of course, we will protect ourselves in that manner. And indirectly, we also educate our clients who educate their friends, you know, about STIs and prevention and et cetera, et cetera. And it's all done very narratively, but it is a way of getting that message out there and that ripple effect. So, there's that one. With bad mothers is a really common one as well, which, again, I absolutely refute. Sex workers always fitted in very well with my family. When I was studying as well, it meant that, yes, I could earn good money in a shorter period of time so I could spend more time with my family and, you know, pay for them to have a nice school uniform, go to a good school, you know, et cetera, rather than doing night fill in a supermarket, which there's nothing wrong with that, but it would have taken me away from my children more. Oh, God, where do you want me to start?
I know
you know so many of these as well.
I know. You hear them all the time and they're incredibly, incredibly frustrating, but they do add to the misconceptions that are that end up being really damaging, and they do things like prevent us from decriminalizing the sex work. I think misconceptions play a huge role in that. What I'm also interested to maybe hear a little bit more about is whether or not you think a lot of the misconceptions or a lot of the objections to sex workers and the sex work industry is steeped in misogyny, because from, you know, looking from the outside in, it feels like a lot of the objections come from a place of denying mostly women, but denying the agency of women to do work, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, I mean, that's what the Swedish model is, you know, it's denying us the agency to do that. But there's also a long-standing, you know, history of politicians and people in power putting laws in place and stating what we are allowed to do with our own bodies. You know, it's like abortion laws and things like that. It, realistically, it shouldn't be anybody else's business, but they decide to make it their business, you know. And I hear a lot about street-based sex workers. You know, they're brought up a lot in the argument against decriminalisation, which is incredibly frustrating. Street-based sex work in Adelaide accounts for less than 1% of sex work. There are about 2,000 sex workers in Adelaide. There's no more than 20 street-based sex workers, but because they're highly visible, they are the most marginalised group. They are hit by police all the time because they are visible. They're an easy target. It's always seen that they have had no choice. They are forced into that situation, and they have choice, and they have chosen to work in the framework that they are working. And you hear the, but I don't want to see that. What do you actually see? What do you see? You see a woman walking down a street. They're not performing sex acts openly for the world to see. That's done privately. And it's only engaging with a client and getting in a car. That's all they're doing. And you see that daily. People getting into taxis, getting out of taxis. You know, it's no different. Like I said, incredibly frustrating. And again, it's the most marginalised groups that get hit the hardest.
Absolutely. And there's also, you know, this idea that what if there are women in sex work who don't want to be in sex work? And I feel like the thing that pops into my head is there are probably people in lots of jobs who don't really want to be there, but it's about paying your bills, and it's about, you know, do we ever ask accountants, you know, do you love your job? Do you feel used? Do you, you know, like your clients? But also, do you think there's a case to be said for if there are people in sex work, if there are women in sex work who don't actually want to be there, as with any other role, criminalising and stigmatising that person makes it so much harder for them to actually leave if they do want to.
Absolutely, absolutely. And huge great gaps in your CV, you know, as well. It just compounds the issues. But I would agree with you completely. You know, in any job market, there are people that don't enjoy their job.
Yeah.
And there are also, you know, even if you do enjoy your job, there are days when you don't want to go and you have a crappy day. Mm-hmm. And that's sex work and it's any other work. And, you know, I talk about sex work being empowering, which I find it really is. And I know that many sex workers do. Mm. And you will get the aunties saying, no, 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 it's absolutely not empowering. You know, it's degrading. It's excessive. Well, I'm sorry, but I don't believe the guy that served me coffee this morning, you know, the barista, was particularly feeling empowered by his job this morning either, you know.
And why should you have to feel empowered by your job to actually have rights in your job and to be safe in your job? Well, I think that's probably all we've got time for, unless there's anything else that was there anything else that we've missed?
Next year, what's going to be different for your organization, assuming that Zareeba's optimism is well-founded, and this legislation is changed or introduced and passed?
Well, as with any law, it won't, you know, nothing will change immediately. It will take a long time for things to be implemented, and it's an unknown for us, it really is. But we will still need to lobby to keep decriminalisation. It's not something that's going to come in and we can sit back and relax, and we'll always be there to support sex workers. It just means that there will definitely be more contact with police reporting crimes committed against sex workers if we have the freedom to do that, you know, without fear of being prosecuted ourselves.
Yeah. And having recourse to the law without being victimised by it, probably. Mm-hmm.
And we'll have to do a lot of training, I suppose, on running your own business and dealing with the ATO and things
some
like that.
Some new challenges.
Some good challenges, though.
Some
much
very
better than
good,
the ones under criminalisation, so that's fantastic.
Yeah, that's very exciting.
Yeah. No wonder I'm enthusiastic. Awesome. Thank you so, so much for coming along, Sharon.
Thank you.
We'd be really keen to hear more. And hopefully we'll put some more information about SIN and some other stuff that's going on as well on the Facebook page. And
That would be wonderful.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much, Sharon.
Thank you.